Hello and welcome to BitNotes. This is David Collins and we'll be talking about video games and playing some good old video game music. Alright, we're going to play a track from a classic game that I loved playing as a kid. It's actually from the Shinobi series, which some of you may know. Shinobi, for those who don't know, is basically this ninja game series developed by Sega. And I'm not that familiar with the series, but one game I did love was the Game Gear Shinobi. This is the version of Shinobi that, surprisingly enough, was played on the Game Gear, which was Sega's answer to the Game Boy in the early 90s. I remember when my brother and I were like asking for our consoles for Christmas. Oh boy, just like many kids are doing around the country right now. We considered, did we want a Game Boy or a Game Gear? And, I mean, Game Boy seemed a little more popular, but Game Gear had colour and a bright screen, so obviously it was far more superior than the Game Boy. So we bought it, and it hung around for maybe a year or two, and it was a decent thing. There was this TV tuner that looked exciting, but we never really got. And then, of course, in the end, the Game Boy went on and was to last for practically a decade, although, albeit by being reinvented quite a few times. So, the Game Boy definitely did beat that round, and then Nintendo became the kings of all portable gaming. Later on, with the Game Boy, then the Game Boy Advance, then the Nintendo DS, and it's really only that with the iPhone and portable gaming platforms that Nintendo's dominance in the portable gaming industry has been challenged. But that's kind of a whole thing for another day. For now, we'll go back to the early 90s and play, I think, my favourite track from the game Gear Shinobi. Have a listen. Well, that was certainly short and sweet. That was Joe, also called Highway 2, by Yuzo Koshiro. Now, for those who don't know, Yuzo Koshiro is yet another great big guy when it came to the original chiptune and classic video game music scene. He developed music, he composed music not only for the Shinobi series, but also for the entire Streets of Rage series, which a lot of people felt was very influential. He also did music for some of the 8-bit Sonic games, including, and I've actually looked this up on Wikipedia, so it seems reliable, but apparently even Janet Jackson sampled some of his music once. I would really like to confirm that, but apparently it's on Wikipedia, so who can deny? And they also, by the way, I know that they usually have citations, but in this case cited some website that I'd absolutely never heard of and wasn't citing anything else in response, so... But to talk a little about the Game Gear Shinobi, it was a fun game. It was one of those games where when you started off, you could choose which level you began with. So there were four levels, you know, Highway, Woodland, Cave, and Harbor. And you chose which level to go into. You know, basically you were a ninja and all your fellow ninjas had been kidnapped. So you went and rescued them. And in each of the four stages, you rescued one of the ninjas. And then you, all together, you went and took on Neo City, which is apparently the center of evil. And you ended up in this really weird palace with all these crazy puzzles and ended up having to use all your abilities. Because that was the fun thing. When you defeated one of the... When you rescued one of your companions, you could use his powers. One of the things I really liked about that game was that there was actually a bit of strategy to it on an overall level. Because, now, to be honest, this is something that the Mega Man games do a lot. But the idea was that you could take on levels in any sequence that you wanted to. But if you were a little clever about it, you'd actually realize that there was a hidden order to it. And if you went through the levels in that specific order, things would become a lot easier. For instance, there was the first level usually I found was the highway. That was because the helicopter boss, yes, you're a ninja with a sword and a helicopter attacks you and you have to jump and you have to swing your sword and hit the helicopter. And the weird thing is, if the helicopter doesn't get hit, it hurts you. But if it does get hit, it seems to pass right through you and doesn't hurt you. So anyway, so you attack the helicopter and then you rescue Pink. And the Pink has all these bombs. And basically, the whole thing is that some of the friends that you rescue are easier to work against the final bosses of other levels. So by doing it in the right sequence, you'll always have the ninja best equipped to deal with that given boss. Like I said, something that Mega Man does a lot. And so figuring that out was cool and was pretty much a fun little challenge for me. You know, it's funny, when I think of the game, I just picture myself, I forget where it was, but there was some hotel I was in with my parents, and I was just sitting cross-legged on the floor, Game Gear in hand, and hooked up, of course, to the power supply, because the Game Gear's batteries would not last for more than 40 minutes, at least in my mind, and it was just, loved finding the playing the game, figuring out the best strategy, and just... And all the abilities, like being able to walk on water if you were yellow, or being able to crawl on the ceiling if you were pink, and all these sort of fun abilities. So, I don't know, it was always a fun game, and I really enjoyed it. We're going to move on to another Sega game, although they're technically not Sega. You may have heard of this studio called Adelaide Software, and they're a French studio, and they made The Little Big Adventure and The Little Big Adventure 2 and a few others. I think Time Commando, I forget exactly. These guys seemed like these are the sort of development studio in the 90s that you love. They seem to really appreciate games as something where you express and have fun and not just, you know, put a bit of passion into it, just have a bit of enjoyment with it, push new things, and... Essentially, they did this, and then Sega bought them out, surprisingly. And here's the fun part. They actually changed their name to No Cliché, and they released basically two games in the Dreamcast. Toy Commander and Toy Racer. Now, Toy Racer was a bit of a spin-off. It wasn't a full game. It was more... It almost seemed like a technical demo, because it was like a multiplayer game that they could play online. You could literally, on a dial-up modem on the Dreamcast, you could play racing games, racing as toys with other players. But they were planning another game called Argatha, which was a horror, survival game where you played someone who looked like a Sean Connery lookalike. And the great new feature of the time was that you could use a torch, and when you used the torch, it would light up what was directly in front of it. And at the time, this was considered brilliant, highly sophisticated lighting systems. And boy, think of what they could do! Of course, in the following decade, that technique got a little overused. But Alan Wake and Alone in the Dark, which incidentally the people from Adelaide actually developed the first one, but then apparently Ubisoft kind of screwed them over about the sequels or something, and then they split off and formed Adelaide. But the fact is, Toy Commander is definitely a great game, and rather than continue on about it, I'm going to play some music from it. Okay, I kind of made a slight mistake. It's not Adelaide that no cliche originally were, it was Adeline Software. So I kind of knew I got it wrong, and apologies. Apologies to all the folks who may have formerly worked at Adeline Software and then no cliche. So, like I said, Adeline makes some classic games, and the music track you just listened to was made by Philippe Vachi. Essentially, it's a good track and pretty much enjoyed. He generally worked on a lot of the Adeline's and No Cliches music, so he's clearly a cool guy. Toy Commander is quite a game. Essentially, what's happening is that there's meant to be you're a kid and in a house who plays with his toys, and then I think you get disinterested in your toys for a while, and then suddenly the toys start this toy rebellion. So you seem to have control of some of the toys. And what you have to do is you basically control toys in turn and try to fight other toys in this toy rebellion. It's a really fun game because essentially it all takes place in a house, except for one extra bit that takes place in the garden. And so basically the levels are all rooms in the house, whether your parents' bedroom, your own bedroom, the living room, or the hallway. And I really like the design of it. I mean, the kid clearly lived in a rich house. I mean, they had a projection TV in the early noughties and they had this whole pool area. But that's not good. The levels were a lot of fun. It could be a little frustrating, but you basically controlled jeeps and aeroplanes, and you could even place down plastic army men that would shoot at whatever was near them, and you could control helicopters and drop erasers. It was always a little fun. I mean, and you know, mines were like tacks and you know, thumbtacks and stuff, and all the and when you shot, you weren't shooting, you know, bullets, you were shooting pencils and all this. It was just a fun game because it kind of had that whole childish imagination sort of thing, but also the levels were pretty creative. For instance, at one stage, there's basically a gigantic T-Rex toy in a bunny suit that's destroying this toy city, and so your basic mission is to destroy it. So a couple of fun missions like that. They even actually made an extra Christmas special mission, so it was nice that they had. I would have liked to see more of those things. It's kind of pity that more people didn't play it. They were planning on making a Dreamcast port. Unfortunately, when a Dreamcast platform was cancelled, so was the studio. Well, the studio ended up having to shut down. But it was a fun game, and like I said, like bright colours, and the ending kind of took me by surprise. It was a very simple ending. You'd been playing the toy with the toys for a while, and you know, it was a little bit of fun, and then suddenly you were given you defeated the main boss, and suddenly you were given this strange little mission, and so you went along with it, and suddenly, as you were finishing up the mission, which you didn't understand, it would be this transition, and I don't know, it's hard to describe without spoiling it, but it suddenly was very sentimental. It suddenly had ideas and told you about this boy who he'd become and what role the toys and his imagination had played in his life, and I just found that surprising and very touching as well. I'm going to, but yeah, so fun game and great soundtrack as well, and a lot of creative levels. All right, what I'm about to play next, and I feel almost guilty that I'm actually just rushing this one on you. I kind of got this one at the last minute, but I've actually been wanting to play this track ever since I started this radio show. It is about 7 minutes long, and I am not going to cut it down because I believe that if you respect the music, you will never take any shortcuts or cut them down. Well, I mean, I've done that a few times when I've had to fade out, but don't let my own hypocrisy distract you from what I'm trying to say here. The point is, this is a track that I love. It is from a game that I love. It is one of those classic games that engages you and actually makes you feel you're in another world almost, with different rules and different atmosphere and different feeling to the whole thing. I mean, a few years ago, nostalgia can cloud things. So I opened up an emulator, an Amiga emulator. I put in the game. I played it. Did it hold up? It most certainly did. In fact, I enjoyed it so much that I actually made it through and played, you know, through later levels. I mean, there's this thing going around that kids like are better at games, but trust me, I didn't have the coordination back then to completely get through all the levels. And when I was an adult, I could get through them a lot faster. And oh boy, I mean, there's so much to the game. Some of it gets even pretty crazy as well. And Actually, in one of the later levels, it suddenly changes to a completely different genre briefly for a level or two, which I thought was really creative. It's like, boy, how many other secrets did this game have? But ultimately, it was just a game. So many things I loved about it. Such a great atmosphere. And I think the music will give you some idea. Just listen to this track and just imagine a whole game set to this music. We'll be right back. That was the theme from Turrican 2, The Final Fight by Chris Hulsbeck. Turrican 2 was developed by Factor 5 and Rainbow Arts. And boy, it was such a good game. It was, like I said, it just engaged you from the minute you turned it on. It was like a sci-fi. There's actually a plot to it as well, which actually surprised me. You see, back then, the story would come in two ways. It'd be in the manual, or maybe the story would be in the game itself. But sometimes, in order to see the story to a game, you actually had to go onto the title screen and just leave the controller aside. So many people didn't actually see the story. Basically, you're a guy on a space cruiser in the far future, and then suddenly an evil person, suddenly flash of light, comes aboard your ship and starts killing everyone. But by playing dead, he avoids you, and so what you do is you grab on this suit of power armor and say, it is time for revenge, and head back down to the planet's surface, which, I don't know why I assume that's where the evil guy is. I never was quite clear on that point. But the game, once you got in, most people wouldn't even ignore that. It was just this surreal sci-fi-ish landscape with floating eyes and little robots that you could jump on top of, and you had this sort of round ray, as I called it. I don't know what it's called, actually, but it's this thing where you could shoot in any direction, just move it like your sword was a beam that you could sweep your enemies, and had invisible item boxes, and it's just stuff like that. Music, it just really brought the whole thing to life. It's like, oh boy, it really felt like an alien planet, really felt like another world. And I think Turrican 2 was one of the reasons I appreciated video game and video game music so much. Oh boy, it is just an ultra classic. There was obviously a Turrican game before that, which I never played. I think there was a sequel too, which mightn't have been as good. And I also think right now the Turrican rights are in two different games companies, and they haven't really been able to make, you know, a more modern sequel. But Chris Hulsbeck has actually done a heck of a lot of music video game composition. I mean, just listen to that track. There's so much in it. There's so much energy, and there's so many things and so many ideas and so many emotions and feelings. I mean, this is quality stuff. This is great video game music. This is great music. It doesn't matter that it comes from a video game, although it was great because it just added to the whole experience. And I think it gave it that sense of otherworldly feeling, and it just interested you and it got you engaged, and there was some great music. So, how do we finish up? How do we top that? We don't. I can't. There's no point. Sorry. No, but seriously, I figure I might as well throw in you a bit of an Amiga track from another classic Amiga game. So, let me just give you the quick heads up. The story to this one is also fairly straightforward. You have a girlfriend. Things are getting on okay. An evil witch doctor comes, kidnaps the girlfriend. You're kind of pissed, but he turns you into a monkey. That's the plot. You fortunately have the ability to shoot fireballs out of your mouth. Apparently the guy botched his spell somewhat, and thus begins the epic journey travelling across this weird, surreal landscape, dealing with all these crazy monsters that seem to have Inca themes and spikes and all this sort of stuff, and to try to regain your girlfriend and regain your human form. It is quite a game. It's called Toki. It was developed by TAD Corporation, and the music you're going to hear from the Amiga version is by Pierre-Éric Loriot. It's probably going to give you the ending theme, because I like to save ending themes for the end of the show. But Toki, another game with good music, and it was a fun game. I mean, I found it difficult and challenging, and the only way I got to the end of the game was by using a cheat that gave you infinite lives. But damn it, it was a good game, and thanks for the memories.